Alright, normally I'd do the weather right now, but I'm not doing the weather, okay? Because I got shit I gotta do. So joining me from, I don't know where he's at. He tends to get around the nation, the western part of the nation pretty well. Ken Rogers. Rogers, good morning. How are you?
Fine, sir. How are you?
I got a few issues this morning. I can't find a cup that's my go-to cup. I can't find it this morning, so that has me irritated. So, I got no issues, I think, right now. How about you? You have any major issues you're dealing with right now?
No.
None?
Everything's okay, kind of, sort of, normal for me. So.
All right. Well, there you go. All right, so where are you physically? Are you up in Idaho?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Going to Seattle the day after tomorrow, and, let's see, that's the next trip is planned, so trying to get ready for that.
So is that a work trip relative
no,
to
no,
the next project?
No, I've got granddaughter watch, so.
That's awesome. All right. Are you a good babysitter?
Yeah.
Are you good?
Well, Betty's a lot better than I am. You know, I have patience issues, so.
All right, I'm with you. Everybody's got another limitation, so it's good that Betty's gone. All right, I wanted to have you on to talk about alcohol and PTSD. But before we do we got to reintroduce everybody to you a little bit. So give us like a less than 5-minute Ken Rogers bio. Born and raised, joined the Marine Corps, did this, did that, and then ready? Go.
I'm ready. Okay, my name's Ken Rogers. I was born in Casa Grande, Arizona in 1947. Raised there, desert rat. Joined the Marine Corps in August of 1966. Had to wait to get to boot camp because the Corps was so popular at the time. And got in on October the 4th of 1966 in platoon 3333 at San Diego Marine Corps Recruit Depot. Went to Vietnam in 1967 in late March to Hill 55 and the 26th Marines. Hill 55 was southwest of Da Nang. After there about a month, went north to Quezon, right about the ending of the Hill fights, and was there for the next 11 months and some days, I believe, was there for the Siege of Quezon. After I got out of Vietnam, I went 5th Battalion Recon in Camp Pendleton, which I actually liked because nobody messed with us. But the platoon sergeant there said, I know where you were in Vietnam. And he said, we're going to be sent back. So he said, I'm going to get you transferred. And so I got transferred to 32nd Street Naval Station and worked in the brig, where most of the brig guards were crazier than anybody that was incarcerated there. After I got out of the Marine Corps in 1969, got married, had kids, went to college, got divorced, moved to New Mexico, met my current wife, Betty. We moved back to California, then we moved to Idaho, where I became a filmmaker and made a film about my company of Marines at the Siege of Quezon called Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, which we are still in the midst of living with. Didn't know it was going to last this long, but it's gratifying. And we're now making a film about the wives of combat veterans. We've interviewed 8 women. We're getting ready to go to Detroit in August to do another one. And soon we'll be trying to get that finished up. And that's my story.
You know what? That was pretty good. I'm for an enlisted Marine, I'm like shocked that you like crushed that thing. Well done.
Wait a minute. You know, I mean,
what?
I knew enlisted Marines were a hell of a lot smarter than officers.
Okay,
so,
then you didn't meet too many officers. Okay, just so you know.
Right. Unfortunately, I did.
If that's the case, and I didn't even clean my tongue off after I said enlisted. Okay. So, you criminals, first of all, before we talk about alcohol and PTSD, Bravo, you said, has lasted longer than you thought. Actually, just I read there's an anniversary of sorts, a Quezon anniversary, what, yesterday or earlier this week?
I think it was the ninth.
When they actually left the hill for good.
The last people left, yeah.
Yeah.
They were supposed to leave a couple of days earlier, I think, but then the North Vietnamese attacked the place, and so they were stalled and couldn't get out. But it was the 9th, I think, is the official day they left. So,
okay. All right. That probably a little bit bittersweet for you all, yes?
Oh, yeah, pretty bittersweet for me. You know, just like, you know, I mean, for somebody that was there and went through all that stuff, and it just wasn't a siege. You know, there were a lot of other guys died there in that location over a two-year period, or a little over a year, you know, from like April 67 through July 68. I think, man, maybe I'm wrong, but over 1,000 Marines were killed there. So, and then, you know, all of a sudden it's not important. And strategically, I'm sure the people that were in charge of all of that business thought they knew what they were doing. But for somebody that went through that shit, man, that was hard to take. So
you could identify when we did the same thing in Iraq, and all of a sudden the places that we fought in Iraq, like Fallujah, Ramadi, the Islamic State is romping around in those places, and people are having meltdowns. You looked at that and said, been there, done that, boys?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, well, I look at all of that stuff, you know. I mean, you know, Afghanistan is like, how long has that place been going on?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Since 2002, is that 2001?
Yep. 2002.
And it's just like it goes on and on and on, and people are getting killed, and why are we there? I mean, I understand we're supposed to be protecting the United States, but it's just like, I'm not sure we're getting that done. And in the meantime, we have service people that come home that are permanently altered,
yeah.
I think.
Busted.
So.
Busted.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. With all that said, and back to Bravo's lasted. For those of you, again, Bravo, you can find on, if you're a member of Amazon Prime, you can watch Bravo for nothing. Bravo, exclamation mark, Common Men, Uncommon Valor is the story of Bravo Company 126. You said it's lasted longer than you thought. What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, we just started out to tell the story, and then we made a film, and when we first started out making a film, we were lucky if we could get 50 people to come watch this thing. And, you know, it just, you know, having never done it before, I had no idea how these things take on a life of their own. And it's like, you know, this film is now have a life of its own. People are watching it. They're still watching it. They watch it on Amazon Prime. They're still trying to get DVDs. They're, you know, I mean, not too long ago, they had a big screening in Paris, Tennessee, where hundreds of people came, and, you know, so it just keeps going on, and it requires work on our end to, you know, maintain it. So I didn't anticipate that being the case after, basically, since we started this, it's been 9 years now, so.
Wow. Well done. It's if you haven't watched it yet, watch it. It's the single best documentary I've seen about war. The vividness of Ken's interviews with his comrades will blow you away, and I'll leave it at that. All right, thank you. Well, no, thank you, and ultimately, thank Betty. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Because it was Betty's. It was Betty's idea. You know.
And Betty's drive. So,
you know, doofus, we should probably record some of this stuff because it's so powerful. It's before people start going away. I wanted to have you on and talk to you, get your thoughts on alcohol and post-traumatic stress disorder. For some reason, culturally, even now, when people are struggling with post-traumatic stress, we don't look at them and say, you have to stop drinking. And even when I thought about talking about this, I thought, oh, man, that just doesn't feel right to say. Like, what am I like? You know, what's next, Mac? You're going to be an advocate for bring back prohibition? And the answer to that is no. But if you're a leader and you love the people that you lead and you've seen them, especially if you've seen them in combat, their courage and selflessness, how do you not say that to somebody? Because it is the truth. You cannot deal with post-traumatic stress and be a drinker at the same time. And I want to get your thoughts on that. First of all, when you came back, there was no post-traumatic stress. You were just dealing with your shit, right? And did liquor play a big role, not a big role? Talk to me about your life with living with post-traumatic stress and liquor.
Yeah, I think so. I'll say this first before I talk about PTSD, is that I think probably I was an alcoholic before I was a kid. You know what I mean? I just think I had the makeup to be an alcoholic. So I would have probably been a drunk whether I went to war or not. But I think that when I got back, I couldn't drink enough. I mean, I could not drink enough to deal with whatever I was dealing with at the time. And when I first came back, I came home on 21-day leave, and I think I probably got drunk every night. And then I went back to the Recon, and every chance I had, I was in the club and drinking. And that went on for, well, till 1986, basically, is when I stopped drinking. And, you know, I think what I was trying to do was alter my consciousness enough to where that stuff wasn't always gnawing at me. Because, you know, the way PTS works on me is I have my moments of rage or paranoia or all of these symptoms, but it's always back there, I think, gnawing at the back of your brain like a rat, you know, and it's constant and it's ongoing. And, you know, till you figure out that, hey, this is the way I am, and this is the life I've chosen for myself, and this is the way it's going to be, so I just need to learn how to handle this stuff. You don't know, you don't have any inkling of how to deal with post-traumatic stress, and alcohol does not help. So, and I didn't start dealing with my PTS until I started drinking.
Would you say until you quit drinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
So almost 20 years later is when you begin to learn how to, and the way I describe it is how to coexist with it. Cause it ain't going away. Right.
It ain't going away. It's there. It's part of who you are, part of the person you've become. And alcohol doesn't do anything. You know, you think that it masks all this stuff, but it doesn't. It just makes it manifest in some other stupidity. I mean, you're better off having PTSD sober, because at least you got enough sense not to be stupid. You know, but when you get drunk and you have PTS, you do stupid shit. That's my experience. So, you know, if you're paranoid about something, you're twice as paranoid after you get drunk. You know, if you get mad about something, the rage is worse if you get drunk. That's how it affected me. And you know, you can't tell anybody to quit drinking. You can't. I mean, you can tell them that, but that didn't mean they have to do it themselves. And I had to make up my mind that I was either going in the toilet for good, or if I wanted to be a person that was of worth on the planet, I needed to stop drinking. Because drinking was a problem I had before I ever went to war.
Okay.
That's what I think.
So what got you to stop drinking? And let me say this. You can tell people to stop drinking, right? Only they can do it. Here's what I think, though. I think when somebody from our warrior tribe looks at you and says that, with somebody with that kind of credibility, That may not make you stop today, but you won't forget it. You won't forget that advice, right? And maybe at some point you act on that advice, because the best advice I've ever got about dealing with stress post-traumatic is from Marines that were older and wiser than me and looked and said, yeah, this is what you're going to live with. And they were right. And I didn't realize how smart they were at the time, but over time I did. But yet culturally, it is just not something that comes out of our mouths, for God's sakes. To tell somebody not to drink. But as you said, I can guarantee you, if you combine post-traumatic stress with alcohol, you're going to go down door number two. Okay. And it doesn't end well down that door. All right. You will destroy your life. You will destroy other people's lives. You will destroy a lot of your relationships, and you will be alone and desolate or possibly dead. Right. And so,
that's right.
But we don't like to, I don't, it's like, okay, whatever. So it's just to me odd in this culture that we won't look at you and bluntly say that to you right to the face and whatnot. So your thoughts on all that?
Well, you know, I mean, I think there's a long culture of drinking in the Marine Corps.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think it's like it used to be, but I think if you go back to Smedley Butler's time and Dan Day, those guys, I mean, that's what they did. Or that's the image that they projected, that they were hard drinking, hard living, hard fighting, professional warriors. I've read some stories by a guy named Thomason, right? John Thomason, is that his name?
Right.
He wrote all those great short stories about World War I.
Yeah, Thomason.
You know, I mean, right. I think he was fit right in that, image of the Marine who was drunk all the time, except when he had to go to war. And, you know, so I think that, you know, is acceptable behavior and always has been, is something that you were supposed to do, especially probably if you're an enlisted man. But,
exactly.
You know, I mean, but it was just, you know, you can handle it. You're a Marine. Handle it. We're not going to talk about it because you just need to clean up your act and do it. And, you know, I mean, I can think of all the times that I was in that Marine barracks at 32nd Street Naval Station, and the NCOs were, God, man, you know, we used to find them laying on the floor of their barracks, you know, drunk in the morning, and, you know, gunnies and staff sergeants and shit. So, you know, they had the same problems we did, you know, and so, it's, you know, I mean, you get to a point where you accurately describe what you do. You destroy your life. You destroy the lives of the people who love you. You destroy your friendships because people just get tired of putting up with you. I mean, you know, you're an asshole. When you drink and have PTSD, you're an asshole. I was just an ass. I was sarcastic, cynical. Piss people off, hurt their feelings, and didn't care. It was like, and until I got married a second time, I was still drinking heavily, and, but I married a woman who understood that I needed to be able to articulate what had happened to me in Vietnam, and she listened, and I came to the conclusion that she wasn't going to stick around very long if I didn't get my shit together.
So what makes you stop drinking ultimately?
Well, you know, I just figured out that I was either going up or down, and it was my choice, and I better do it now because I was about past the point of no return. Because I was like drinking a case of beer a day, and then maybe a bottle of wine, or half a fifth of whiskey, or, you know, I mean, I was consuming large amounts of alcohol. So
that's like North Dakota, Minnesota drunk. That's not like California, Arizona drunk.
Oh, yeah, well, that's, no, drunk is drunk, man, so.
All right, so when you get asked for advice about post-traumatic stress, and drinking and whatnot. What do you say to people?
Well, you know, I haven't been asked that very much. So
how fucked up is that? Right? It's because it's you see it all the time, right? You don't see when you see somebody who's fucked up by PTSD really bad, and you ask them, "Do you drink?" You know the answer you never get? No. You never get that answer, and yet you've never been asked. That's awesome. So
really.
Hypothetically, if I came to you and I was a young veteran, and I said, "Man, my shit is kicking my ass." And, you know, and I'm drinking, and it makes some of the pain go away, but it's killing me. What would you say?
Well, you know, I'd just say, you know, you need to quit drinking, and use my story as an example of why, and tell them that, you know, alcohol really doesn't make PTSD go away. You just think it does. You know, and if you want to die of cirrhosis of the liver, or if you want to ruin all your relationships, if you haven't already, if you want to be able to succeed at things that you want to succeed at in life, you need to stop drinking. And as soon as you stop drinking, then you're going to have to be able to deal with your PTSD on some kind of level where you can use your common sense to combat some of the effects of it.
All right, so you stopped drinking, and then what happened? Was there a moment after you stopped drinking where you went, "Damn, I can't believe it took me that long to do this," where you thought, "Man, I can't believe I lived like that for that long"? Did you ever have a moment like that?
No, I never did. I mean, it was like it didn't make any difference because I did it. You know, when I drinking was, it was really weird. I went through this moment, 1 or 2 year period, that I had no idea who I was. I'd lost my crutch, I guess, and I just didn't understand who I was. And so then I began this long process of discovering the person that I might have been before I went off and A, started drinking, and B, got my ass shot at. So, you know, it was a long process. It takes a long time, I think. You know, you don't learn how to figure out what you have become overnight. It ain't gonna happen. I mean, it's just not. It takes a long time. Or let me say this: it took me a long time, and I'm pretty smart, but I'm also hard-headed.
What?
And stubborn.
Hold on, my headset's screwed up. Did you just say you were pretty smart?
Yeah. Whoa. I should have been an officer.
Wow. And so after you stop drinking, you have to kind of find out who this person is because you've been drunk for so long?
Yeah. You know, wow. who is this person that inhabits my body now that I don't have this haze, this alcoholic haze? You know, and it's just not alcohol. I mean, if you're a opioid speed freak, junkie, pothead, you know, all of these things where you're using this stuff to excess, you don't know who you are. And maybe you don't want to know. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's part of the issue, but it took me a long time to discover who I was after I quit drinking. And then I had to come to grips with the fact that I had these issues that combat had initiated me into. And that took another 20 years. So, you know, it's a lifelong thing that you're now going to have to deal with. And the sooner you can get your act squared away and start dealing with what you are, the better off you are.
Wow. Okay. That's what I wanted from you. I wanted to have a pretty brief conversation with you this morning and get your thoughts on it. Because when I asked Ken about coming on and talking about PTSD and alcohol, I think the quote was, "I can do that."
I know something about that.
I know something about that. The yes. So, first of all, thanks as always. And I mean, while you were talking, one of the things that occurred to me, all the different ways that your and Betty's work has impacted people around the world, right? Would never have happened if you didn't stop drinking.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd be dead, I think, probably. Because that's where you're headed. You're headed to death. We're all headed there anyway, but you're headed there a hell of a lot sooner than you would have been. So.
Interesting. All right, sir. First of all, as always, I appreciate your time and always enjoy having you on. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck babysitting. Don't screw it up. Make sure Betty's on her job.
She will. She watches me like a hawk, man. So.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Semper Fi.
There you have it. Semper Fidelis. That is the one and only Ken Rogers from, I think, just outside Boise, Idaho today. Unbelievable. That's why this is a cool job. I talked about Ross Pape a little bit ago, but you're going to meet him in, I don't know, about 4 or 5 minutes. And then Gunner's going to join us later on. So we'll talk to Michael Beyond today. Ross Pape is now a farmer, served in the United States Army, but he wanted to join the Marine Corps, okay? And so he's a cavalryman, served in the 3rd ACR, drove a tank, and was a sniper for them, and got out, I believe, as a sergeant. And he's a farmer now. So I told if you missed the first 30 minutes of the program, Ross had an older brother, Riley, which is how I met the family. I met Riley in Iraq after I was getting interviewed by the radio station that I worked at. And Ross's dad, his name's Ron, is a farmer. And Ron doesn't listen to talk radio, but he did listen. He was listening to the Twins game, which was on the radio station that I worked at. So when he got in the car to go to the farm in the morning, it was still on the station with the Twins game. And he was listening to me getting interviewed. So he calls into the radio station, and he says, hey, my name's Ron, and could you look up my son and say hi? I said, sure. What's his name? He said, Riley Pape. He's a corporal. I said, what unit? He said, Alpha Company, 1st Recon. I said, okay. So I finished the interview. I called down the 1st Recon later that day, and I'm working for General Mattis at the time. And I called down to the company office, and they're like, sir, he's out on operation. I said, well, let me leave a message and a number. Tell him to call me when he gets a chance. So a few days later, he calls. Sir, this is Corporal Pape. And I had forgotten. I'm like, yeah, what can I do for you? And he's like, you called me? And I said, oh, Corporal Pape. Yeah, I've got a message from your mom. She loves you. He's like, what? And I introduced myself. And then he came to work in Ramadi. And, as I said, they were doing, those guys, war heroes. They were dressing up in civilian clothes, rolling around in civilian cars. Having a pretty good time. So anyway, so that's how I initially met the family. And then I was supposed to actually meet the family and be with Riley, in Alvarado, Minnesota. His grandparents lived there. And, there was a Memorial Day event going to happen there, and he and I were going to be there. But he was killed in a motorcycle accident. And, so I met Ross. Ross is in the Army at the time. I'm pretty sure he was in Iraq at the time. So, and then I meet, Ryan, the younger brother. And, so we bury, Riley, and the family bury Riley. And then, Ryan, the youngest brother, he graduates from high school 2 years later. and 2 years, two, I don't know, I think it was a week or two later. And then Ryan joins the Marine Corps not too long after that. And so he, first Recon Battalion, and then goes to First Force. The so he is Ryan's killed in a parachute accident, and so Ross is now farming in Northwest Minnesota. So not only does he deal with his combat stuff, you know, he deals with the loss of his two brothers. So you're gonna meet him. He's a funny guy. He's a farmer. He's a farmer from Northwest Minnesota. And he's a good dude. So, don't touch that dial. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next on a Friday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.